When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that's like a nice cup of chai tea before heading to the ATM machine, it's SIFPA. Welcome to SIF Pop Weekly, streaming live most Fridays, or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
It is chai is tea. You would say tea.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he keeps having to remind me he's not my guy in the chair. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy, I have legs, I can walk.
Each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. Even though he's from Nashville, he's never leaving Brooklyn again. It's Dom Fisher, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. Woo! Never leaving.
Oh, man. I felt that was appropriate considering, I think, Brooklyn factors into both of these movies that we're talking about today. We're going to chat a little bit about Across the Spider-Verse. Previously known as Across the Spider-Verse Part 1. So that was the previous title. They changed that title. However, they did not change the spirit of that name. And then Transformers Rise of the Beasts, hopefully part only, but we shall see. Spoiler alerts on my thoughts. So we're going to get into those. We've got a best ever challenge on best ever insect movies, or movies that feature an insect or a type of insect in the title. And then, of course, we'll do some buried treasure as well. But Dom, good to have you back, man. How have things been? It's been a few months.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'm glad to be back. In the meantime, I've been, consuming as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to work on a new tattoo. I'm a tattoo collector, so I want to get my back done. And I'm working on this kind of Marvel DC demons type of thing that's probably gonna cost a car, but
I'm designing my back piece right now, and everybody I've talked to about price, you're not far off.
Wow. I recently got my first tattoos. I think we talked about it on the show a little bit. They're just finger tattoos. They're just like rings. I have a few around one of my pinky fingers, and then like a wedding ring tattoo that I got as well. And I went in, and the advice I received right before I went in was to imagine that the pain you're going to experience is the worst pain you could ever feel. And then when it starts, you'll be like, oh, that's no big deal. And that idea worked perfectly for me. I seriously, they started doing the tattoo and I was like, this is nothing. This is not that bad. There were occasions during the tattoo where I was like, oh, that is pain. Yeah, that's pain. That's what you're doing now is pain. But for the most part, it was not as bad as I expected it to be. And when I say that, I don't want to bring down your expectations if you're going to get a tattoo. I would say keep them up. Leave those expectations of the pain very, very high because it is helpful.
The longest I ever sat for a tattoo was 9 hours.
Oof, wow. So. I cannot. You had to get up and walk and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
You might get some pulmonary embolisms or something if you're
Yeah. No, they stop. They order the place I went to anyway. They order you food and everything since you're going to be there forever. It was a really cool experience. But yeah, it's that feeling definitely intensifies as the hours go on.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, shading.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess my ring tattoo is a little bit thicker, so maybe that's kind of like that. But it's definitely there is a moment that happens where you're like, are you sure you're not done with that section? Because I feel like you've been there for a while. Yep. I feel like, yep. you know. So yeah, oh, I definitely know how that goes. All right, well, I'm excited to get to it. We're definitely excited to have you back on, Dom.
Yes.
Always good to see you and to chat stuff with you. I always enjoy our conversations. I was looking at something. I think it was 3 years ago that we met. Or was it four? It was pre-pandemic, wasn't it? I think it was.
It was. I want to say it was like maybe the year before the pandemic.
I think it was. I think it was like holidays ish 2019.
Yeah.
So yeah. So, it's been fun to have you on every once in a while since then. So glad you're back.
Yeah, it's fun.
All right, well, we're going to get right into it. Let's chat a little bit about Across the Spider-Verse.
My name is Miles Morales. I'm Brooklyn's one and only Spider-Man. And things are going great.
Oh, yeah, you were supposed to be here. Fine.
All right, whatever.
Whatever?
Wow.
Whatever?
So are you like a cow or a Dalmatian?
I am the Spot.
That's not funny.
Don't do that.
Miles's grades are pretty good. A in AP Physics.
That's my little man.
And a B in Spanish.
What?
Ooh, okay.
Miles.
Are you trying to
Mira, eso es imposible.
I gotta go. All right, bye.
He's lying to you. And I think you know it.
After reuniting with Gwen Stacy, Brooklyn's full-time friendly neighborhood Spider-Man is catapulted across the multiverse where he encounters the Spider Society, a team of spider people charged with predicting the multiverse's very existence. But when the heroes clash on how to handle a new threat, Miles finds himself pitted against the other spiders and must set out on his own to save those he loves most. The original Into the Spider-Verse was very well received and I think generally beloved, and so it's not a surprise that we are getting a couple sequels. As mentioned, this was originally named Part 1 of a two-parter. They changed the names to Across the Spider-Verse, and I believe Beyond the Spider-Verse is the next one, which technically is slated for next March. But writer strike probably going to shift that, I would imagine. So we'll see how quickly we get it. But it is definitely part one. So what did you guys think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Andrew, why don't you kick us off?
Oh, I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Absolutely loved it. Dom, what about you?
Yeah, I'm right there. Loved it so much.
That seems to be the general consensus of all but this guy. So I get to, I get to play the guy who hates it because he only likes it a lot. I'm on the high side of like it. This is a great movie, but I'm going to sound like I hate it because everyone like thinks this movie is the next Godfather or something. So
I don't want to give that impression.
Let's get into it though. I know you guys love it and. And I want to hear some of the reasons. So, Dom, why don't you kick us off? What are some of your general thoughts on the movie?
So, I can see why you wouldn't love it and you were on the high side of liking it. Because there is a moment where it does feel a little long. However, what pushed it over the top for me initially and throughout the entire movie is the animation is ridiculously good. There's like this kind of sentient color going on as the moods change and the action sequences change. I mean, the story is great. I mean, we get to really see Miles settle into being Spider-Man. And I mean, starting off with, you know, Gwen is great. And we get to kind of see this dual story go on that also intertwines. And there's I love the way that it ended. Leaving us kind of with this cliffhanger that feels like a comic book that goes along with the animation. It's a lot. There's a lot to love about it. And watching it too, like, you know, a lot of times we have these screenings and we watch it with other critics and everybody's kind of quiet. You know, no one wants to be the person in I love it so much. But so watching it with a full crowd who all really love comic books and love Spider-Man. It's a great IMAX experience, great theater experience.
Andrew, some thoughts.
What I love, first off, I think we can agree that if not one of, or for me, it is, but it's one of the most visually impressive movies I've ever seen in my entire life. It might be the most visually impressive movie, not just animated. Like, they take, you know, visual storytelling to a new level in this
film. Well, I think it's important to say you could not make this in live action. Like, that's, to me, is a sign of a great animated film, is it takes full advantage of the platform, because it would be almost impossible, if not impossible, to actually make this movie live action.
Yeah. So I wanted to get that out of the way. I think everybody's gonna, who sees the movie regardless, is gonna know that this is just visually incredible. But what I love the most about this movie is whenever you look at Into the Spider-Verse, which was the first one, it really focuses on Miles finding out more about himself and, like, what his powers, you know, and it's a great metaphor, you know, for a coming-of-age story. What I loved in this one is it really honed in on the family dynamic, and I think it did it in an absolutely beautiful way. There are some super tear-jerking moments with the mother and father, and just thinking about them now just gets me excited about the possibilities of, or the, obviously I'm going to see this movie many, many times, and I don't think that those emotions are ever going to dampen, or they're going to hit just as hard every single time because they're just pure.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with what you guys have said about the visual feast that's going on here. It is, Andrew, I agree, if not the most visually stunning film ever made, certainly in that conversation. And it's not just that they're doing things on screen that are eye candy, which they are. This entire movie is eye candy. But it's not just that it's eye candy. It's purposeful eye candy. It's saying something about the world you're in. It's saying something about the character who inhabits that world, who's your spider person in that world or whatever. Like, there's intent behind the and different animation styles coming together and doing different things, mixing these kind of animation styles, which, talk about a level of difficulty. Like, that's, you know, that's not easy to do. I should say, not just animation styles. You know, there are several moments of live action in this movie because of the way it plays with the multiverse, and mixing all that stuff and doing it well. And it's really, I think spectacular is the right word. This is a spectacular movie. It is an absolute visual feast. I also agree with you, Andrew, that the emotion is well-earned and beautiful. I think the things that are going on with the family dynamics, I think that opening prologue, which I get, maybe it'd be spoilery to say who it's about, but I'll just, you know, if you've seen the movie, you know. I think is one of the most evocative intros to a movie I've seen in a long time. That has to do with the choice of the background music, the driving drums. It has to do with the character beats. It is a beautifully told backstory for a character that we didn't have that is important for the rest of the movie. And you see this intentionality and this exquisite design throughout the entire movie. And design, in that sentence, what I mean is story design, plot design, character design. I don't necessarily just mean artistic design. This is a very well done story that really hits its beats really, really well. And you may be saying to yourself, well, Aaron, it sounds like you love this movie. It sounds like I am well aware of how amazing this movie is on many, many levels. But I do think there are some things that are pretty big that hold it back for me. And I guess I can get into those later because I don't want to cut off the love fest right away, because I know I am a bit in the minority on this. So I really want you guys to be able to pour on some of the other, whether it be voice performances or other things that you guys enjoy. So what were some of the other things that you came away from just absolutely loving?
Dom, I'll let you go first.
All right. One of them has to be the soundtrack. You know, it's produced by Metro Boomin, who's a hip-hop producer. Mm-hmm. And just like the moving colors and animation styles. The music fits perfectly. It hits every beat. I don't know. I would love to see how they pieced it together, if they sat down and, you know, which songs went with which scenes and which beats hit certain moves and whatnot. And Shameik Moore and Hailee Steinfeld were made to play these characters. I mean, it's, you know, I used to be somewhat opposed to animated films. Because, you know, you get in that weird stage as you're growing up, you're like, that's not for me. I need to watch adult stuff because I'm an adult. And then
I completely missed that stage. I don't know why I was so like, I completely missed it. But I know
what you're talking about.
Yeah. Most people go through it. That's for sure. Yeah.
But, you know, every once in a while you catch one and you're like, why did the way that he said that make a tear fall down my face? And it's crazy.
What is this liquid coming from my eye holes?
What are tears? I don't know what those are. Was it Oscar Isaac? Menacing without trying to be, because you're his character is kind of up in the air. You're like, you seem to be wearing this hero outfit, but your motives seem to be kind of selfish and evil. So you can play with the story a little bit to how you interpret what he's trying to do. Okay, this is going to sound a little weird, but as we're watching it, you're looking at Miles's mom and I'm like, she's kind of attractive. Should I be attracted to an animated character? What is going on? I don't know. No, sorry, honey. I don't. You see what I see, right? And just what they were able to do. I mean, the cameos, ridiculous.
Yeah.
And there's one scene where we really get to understand the multiverse that they're explaining, that's better than most things I've seen that deal with any kind of multiverse. And that's a flood of emotion too, as you see into different universes and you're like, oh, so you just want me to cry. That's cool. I don't need to relive that moment. It's one of those ones I think that require a multiple watch because you're going to see something you didn't see before every single time.
Yeah. The scale, the grandness that this movie climbs to is not the levels that I thought that it was going to go to. It's crazy how big this movie decides to get sometimes. And it never took me out of the movie. I could see that it could potentially take somebody out of the movie and like, oh, so this is a movie now. It's not like fourth wall breaking or anything like that, but it's very referential at moments that I think could. It's a good thing and it's a bad thing, I guess. So.
Well, I guess that's a decent transition into one of the issues I had with the movie. I thought the Spider Society stuff was a mess. I had no connection to any of those cameos. I don't know who any of them are. The explanations that would pop up on screen were up there for a split second. There's no time
couldn't
to
read
them. There's I don't know what we're doing here. I get that Lord and Miller have this style that's being adapted here. It's being adopted here with its very quick, a million miles a minute, that kind of stuff. But I feel like in other movies that have had this, even all the way back to Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, Lego Movie, what was the tech one? I almost said We're the Millers. It's not We're the Millers, but
Millers versus the Machines.
Mitchell's versus the Machines. I feel like in those, that mile a minute stuff is often just the push of the action, the push of the momentum, those kind of things. In this case, it's referential stuff. And what's difficult about that for me, especially in that scene, is it just becomes a jumbled mess of things. I don't know what they are, and I don't understand what they are. Some of them are kind of funny to me, I guess. Hey, there's a Tyrannosaurus Rex that's also Spider-Man. Okay, I guess that's kind of funny, but I don't. But it's not like I get it in any kind of deep level where I'm like, oh my goodness, I remember the T-Rex Spider-Man. You know, there's no kind of connecting point. And when I think of that Spider Society stuff, It really reminds me why I liked No Way Home so much is because the multiverse stuff that it did was integrated fully into the movie. Like the cameos, like 90% of the cameos and references in this movie do not play into this movie at all. Like they are not needed. You could take them out of the movie and the movie would be fine. They are literal winks at the audience, right? And when there's so many of them so quickly, and for so many of them, I just don't get them. And I get that's a me thing. For somebody who maybe gets, you know, most of them or half of them or whatever, it's probably, I guarantee it's a much better experience. And I totally get that. But I found it to be very jumbled and very shallow. I just found a lot of those jokes to be really shallow and not meaningful in any way. And therefore, a little bit felt like a little bit of a waste of time in an already long movie. So that's one of the things that keeps me back from being like, oh, this is the greatest movie of all time, because I think it's a little self-indulgent. I just think that whole section's a little bit like, you know, we're doing this because we've got a green light to do it, and I just don't know that it makes the movie better. I know it doesn't make the movie better for me, and I guess that's the best way to say that.
Yeah. I don't disagree with the thing you said, but I still love the movie.
Of course. And I still really, really like the movie, by the way.
Yeah.
I know.
You're in that such unfortunate position.
No. It's fine. The other part that I have heard friends of mine talk about is how much of a love letter to comic books this movie is. And as somebody who's not a comic book person, I don't know that I feel that as much as most people would. Dom, you even mentioned about the end of the movie, about how you liked that because it felt like, okay, now I got to read the next comic book kind of thing. Yeah. I'm a movie guy. That's not what I want from a movie. I don't want a movie to make me wait 5 years to watch the end of the story. Like, movies to me are best when they're self-contained. Are there examples of my hypocrisy in this? Sure. Lord of the Rings, just, you know, throw it out there. But the idea of those three movies coming out a year at a time as kind of this singular experience, I can try to apply that to this movie. But the problem is now I'm trying to review half a movie. So like if we're talking whether it is next March or a year from next March or whatever, and we've seen Beyond the Spider-Verse, then I feel like I can talk more fully about, you know, I said the same thing on the Dune podcast. I really did. Like I don't know how to judge Dune. Yeah. I don't know how to judge Dune until I see the next one. You know, like it's just because it's not just that it is a problem with to be continued. Like storytelling has done to be continued for a while. Usually it's been on television. That's usually what it is. It hasn't usually been that way in movies. But there certainly have been movies that have been to be continued. But usually what a movie will do, like for instance Infinity War, is that it will be a complete arc or experience on its own that then becomes greater when another part is put towards it. I hear a lot of people using Empire Strikes Back as an example for this movie. Don't come at me with that. Empire Strikes Back is a complete story. You know what I mean? Like it's yes, it has that same like we're in trouble feel at the end. Like we're in darkness. We don't know where we're going at the end. But the story in Empire is complete, and then it moves on to the story in, you know, Return of the Jedi. This has themes, story arcs, and story resolutions that are just completely unknown right now. There are a couple things I could say maybe we resolved in this movie, but even those aren't really, no character is in a place to have completely resolved their story arc in this story. And that's annoying to me. Will it be annoying after I've seen the second one? Nope, because then I'll know what the whole story looks like. It's just like you press pause in the middle of the movie and how am I supposed to review it yet? That's how I feel like, you know, in something like this, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You did hit on my negative. Besides the runtime, I felt was, like Dom said, just a little bit too long, but maybe like 10, 15 minutes too long. But yeah, my big negative is I don't like this precedent that Dune has set of releasing half of a movie and say, oh, well, the second part's coming out. It reminds me of like whenever a video game comes out that immediately needs to be patched, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, except it would be like releasing the video game and saying, well, we're going to patch it 3 years from now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there was a buddy of mine who hit me up and we had this long conversation about the Canon events. Which I don't think is too spoilery, but kind of back and forth of like what this means and is that going to change things or does it matter? So I get what you're saying because it didn't answer some of these questions which are bigger than going to a next movie. I need to like understand what's happening before I go into the next movie.
I mean, it's easy. You can only then talk about it, and this is fine. I have no problem with this, but you can only then talk about it as an experience, right? Mm-hmm. How was your experience taking in this visual media? It was a good experience. I had a good experience. The art style was great, loved it, whatever. But it's harder to talk about it as a story or as a movie. You know, again, what did I think of the movie? Well, I'll tell you when the movie's over. It's not over yet. I will tell you what I thought about the movie when the movie's over.
Then what are we doing here, Eric?
Yes, that's how I feel. Thank you. You have verbalized how I feel.
Nice.
So the only other thing I would mention, and I think those are the main ones that hold me back, but and this, again, is one that could be corrected by the next movie. I don't know. I got some real questions about people we're supposed to really be rooting for and loving in their decisions that they have made in this movie. Because I think there are some nakedly terrible, borderline evil decisions being made that they're just going along with. And I don't get it. I don't understand. That was another part of the Spider Society part that was really difficult for me was I was like, you've ruined a couple characters I really liked because I don't understand how they have been in this environment and have just gone with it. Like that makes no sense to me.
Are you talking about the fatalistic aspect of things?
Yeah. Yeah. They're just like, mm-hmm. I mean, is without getting too spoilery, is the main leader of that whole area, is he just that charismatic that somehow, you know, people I love and thought really understood their own independence and their own. It made me go, wait, is every Spider-Man selfish and bad? Because they're all going along with something that to me seems selfish and bad. Like I thought the whole thing with Spider-Man was like great power and great responsibility. And like all these people are like great power and no responsibility. I don't know. It was just weird to see kind of what the entirety of the Spider-Verse was just like, yeah, this makes sense to me. Let's go along with this guy.
But I think what the movie is saying is that the Spider Society has bastardized that with great power comes great responsibility, because in their mind, the responsibility is to make these quote unquote tough choices. So they think that this responsibility has fallen upon them and that Miguel O'Hara since he's from the future, he's the one who knows, you know, and I guess from a...
And I just don't buy it. I just, it diminishes those characters for me that they would buy that. So... Yeah,
I will say there's a book that just came out called Spider-Man Psychology, and there was a section talking about his motives, and some of it is selfish, and not selfish in like a negative way, but a selfish that I can do everything by myself, even if it looks like it's gonna unravel everything, which it then makes you look like a bad guy.
Yeah. Well, also, I think that you could say Miguel O'Hara is ruling through fear. You know, he's...
But again, But again, they don't have to be there. They are choosing to actively be part of this. This isn't something where somebody has them in prison. Like, they're actively supporting this with their actions.
I think it goes to
they all got pyramid schemed.
Oh, I think it's because they're so lonely in their own universes because no one can understand what they're going through, then now they have a whole society of people who understand, like, oh, yeah, you're lonely, I'm lonely. We have to do these things and trying to live this dual life and lose friends, not tell family members. And now all these people have, like, this shared experience that I guess that's where you get this cult of personality type of society.
Well, that's Miles' driving factor. Like, that's his driving force, is he wants to find a group that he people who understand him.
So what makes... that's fine. I'm just saying the thing that Miles was completely aware of immediately, never on board with, he was our true north in what we're experiencing in this movie. I would have thought there were other people I knew that could be able to do the same thing. What makes, right. You know, I know what makes Miles special. He's the protagonist. I get it. But I'm just saying that the first movie showed me some things about a couple characters specifically that I'm not mentioning because of spoilers, that I'm either just at the best just disappointed with them, or at worst now questioning their their allegiance. Like, so I think the second part, maybe we'll find out more. It could fix some of this for me. I don't know, but for right now I'm just like, your friends did you dirty, Miles. And like,
yeah,
for sure.
And I don't know why. Like, I don't understand how they could do that. So yeah. Anyhow, that's another thing I'm wrestling with in the middle of this movie.
Fair play.
Yeah.
Fair play.
Yeah. Any other thoughts or comments that you guys want to mention again about this movie? I really, really liked. I just want to put that out there. Really, really enjoyed this movie or half movie or whatever. I really do. It really does feel very similar to the Dune review. If you go back and listen to that, it's kind of that same thing where it's just like, I really, really enjoyed this, but I don't know what this is yet. So yeah, that's kind of what I feel. Any final thoughts? Anything else about the Spider-Verse that you guys want to mention? Andrew?
There is actually no mid or post credit scene.
Yeah. Interestingly enough. Dom?
Yeah.
I'm with them already announcing a live action Miles movie in the works. I'm curious to see what happens in the next film, because I have a theory that he somehow gets stuck in a universe where he has now become fully human in our form, and that's where we get this live action movie and jumps off from there.
Nice. My final thought is I think some of the stuff in the final reveal towards the end is really well done. I love it when a story turn, some would call it a twist, whatever, a story turn towards the end is not so complicated that it's impossible to figure out, has... naturalistic clues as to what's going on, and yet is that rewarding for information and in the story turn. So I really did think the story turn towards the what most would say is the end of this movie, and I will say is the middle, was really, really satisfying. So there you go. All right, that is Across the Spider-Verse. I'm going to say part one, even though they took it off, and we will go with Across the Spider-Verse part two, a.k.a. Beyond the Spider-Verse, when it comes out. Okay, let's move on to our next review. Let's talk a little bit about Transformers Rise of the Beasts.
For centuries, our kind has stayed hidden on Earth. But darkness has found us again. Prime. This is about the fate of all living things. Unicron is coming.
A 90s globe-trotting adventure that introduces the Maximals, Predacons and Terracons, to the existing battle on Earth between Autobots and Decepticons. That's a little bit deceptive, but we'll talk about Rise of the Beasts. What did you guys think about a new Transformers movie? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Dom, why don't you start?
I liked it. Because of my '90s predisposition, I liked it. I wanted to love it. I think they could have done stuff to make me love it, but I liked it.
I'm in the didn't like it camp. Andrew, where are you?
I had an epiphany while watching this movie, but I'm going to actually go with liked it. Like, not. I don't think I'm up to where Dom is. But, yeah, I definitely can say that I either have very high side of okay or low side of liked it.
Okay. Well, Dom, tell us what you liked about this movie.
The first thing that jumped out to me was just, it's the 90s. The majority of American society can kind of agree that the 90s was this golden era, where there was fashion, film, music, or all the above. It just was a great time. And I love that these characters, specifically Noah and Toby's character, they kind of embody that New York 90s vibe with the lingo and the things that they were doing that, you know, probably shouldn't have been doing. You know, we got a lot of action. We got a lot of these transformations. I really enjoyed Pete Davidson as Mirage. Dominique Fishback continues to kind of still scenes and kill the role she's in. I'll say what I didn't like for a little later. But overall, I mean, it hit all the blockbuster notes. It did exactly what it was, you know, set out to do. So I think that's why I end up where I'm at.
Nice. Andrew, why did you like it?
Here's my epiphany that I had. So for those of us who watch trailers and everything, we knew that this was going to be like, you know, set in the 90s and that the regular Transformers like Optimus and Bumblebee and Stratosphere, all those guys were going to be in this. But I assume that for people who were watching or who don't watch trailers and they hear that this is Rise of the Beast, they probably just assume, oh, this is going to be a Beast Wars Transformers movie. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to have anything to do with the others. And then when they sit down to watch this movie, they are profoundly disappointed that
it is not a Beast Wars movie. It is not a Beast Wars movie.
It's not a Beast Wars movie.
No, no.
Yeah. Yeah, this is 90% or 80% Transformers with about 20% of Rise of the Beasts. Mm-hmm. So if you're going into this with, which we were talking to Ian, who was super excited about seeing a Beast Wars movie that he didn't get to see. poor guy. But I still think that there are actually things in this movie that one can walk away going, you know what? I enjoyed that experience. And I think that what helped me going into this is my total, not disdain, but just lack of any kind of emotion for the Transformers franchise. Like, I went in with zero expectations. I didn't expect it to be anything at all. But I think that this, besides the first Transformers movie, is like the second best one that they've made. I really
after
liked this.
Bumblebee or after the first one?
After the first Transformers, then this one, then Bumblebee.
Okay.
I like, this one right in front of Bumblebee. But and the thing, it's funny because the thing that I've been complaining the most about the Transformer franchise is actually one of my biggest pros with this film, and it's the human element of it. I think that Anthony Ramos and Dominique Fishback are great. Like, they don't have, like, any romantic chemistry, but that's not what the movie wanted. It didn't need to make them this will-they-won't-they. It was two people just trying to save the planet, you know, from Transformer stuff. And it was really good acting. I really bought into it. The movie does focus more on Noah, Anthony Ramos' character, than Dominique's. But all the stuff that it did focus on with Noah, it worked for me. So
I agree with what you guys are saying. Even though I didn't like this movie, I agree that Anthony Ramos is amazing in this movie. I think he's great. Dominique Fishback is wonderful as well, and even Pete Davidson, who like halfway through the movie, I know that voice. I know that voice. And then I was like, that's Pete Davidson. And then I was like kind of annoyed that it was Pete Davidson because I'd been enjoying it so much. I was like, he's not supposed to be that great of a voice actor, but he is. He's great in this. And really giving it was Mirage, right? Was the character that he played. So I agree with that. I think the performances in it are really well done. I also think there's always going to be something interesting and bombastic about giant mechs fighting. Like, that's always interesting to watch, at least, right? And some of my favorite shots, and honestly, maybe one of the negatives of this movie is I don't think it does enough of this. But one of my favorite things is when you really get a sense of the scale of how big humans are versus how big these machines are. And there are some of those moments. Because if you just have the machines fighting, it's easy to forget. I mean, they could be just toys on your desk at that point. You know what I mean? But when you see the humans with them, I think that can be really powerful, interesting stuff. I'm going to go ahead and turn to negatives because I didn't like this movie, and it's basically all I have left are negatives. And the main one being, this is the kind of movie, much like its predecessors, although not as bad. I would actually agree with Andrew that it's top three Transformers, which is not saying a lot necessarily.
It's not a high echelon of film that it's trying to achieve.
I have Bumblebee at number one. I have Transformers 1 at number two, and I have this at number three. But much like its predecessors, it is the kind of movie for me that as I try to suspend my disbelief, it consistently and constantly dares me not to.
Come on.
Wait, you good? What about this? Can you believe this? And I'm like, I'm trying, man. Okay, well, what about this? Just like, okay, fine. I don't believe you. I'm distracted now. There's so much dumb nonsense in this movie, both plot-wise, character decision wise, and by characters I mean the big robot characters, not necessarily the human ones. And then there's tech nonsense in this where just like it only operates the way it operates because the story needs it to operate that way.
And
that's fine, whatever. We're all here to have a good time, watch robots punch each other. I totally get it. I just don't want to be, you know, bombarded by my inability to go along with what is being said here. And so at some point it just becomes too much for me and I'm out. You know, I just kind of get out, and then I'm just kind of rolling my eyes at it, and Aaron's eyes roll out, so that'll happen.
Voice performances, I really liked Ron Perlman as Optimus Primal. He kind of was right there with Peter Cullen. He, with that, you know, that deep gravelly voice. The fact that Peter Cullen is still doing this is just so awesome. Like, I absolutely love it. And actually, I'll say this, going back to, we were talking about the action in this movie. My favorite action sequence of any of the Transformers movie is in this one right here. And it's on this, this side winding road in Nepal, like, going back and forth down this road.
Yes, there's nice wide shots in that screen that I thought were so really, really good. Yeah.
Like, I was like, where has this stuff been for like the last nine movies?
It's not as jumbled as the base stuff either. The base stuff was always just like robot, spiky, pointy ball car.
Yes.
You never really got a sense for the transformations. I think you get a little bit more sense for the transformations here, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I did enjoy, I'm finding stuff, I guess. I did enjoy, like you mentioned, Dom, I really did enjoy the soundtrack, the 90s-ness of it all. Some of that 90s hip-hop, it just hits different. It's so good.
I mean, the plane scene towards the end, you know, playing LL Cool J, I was like, right? Yeah. This is the scene that's just going to, you know, serve me into the end of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't.
And how...
The one thing I didn't like, though, is when we finally get to see, you know, Optimus Primal and Cheetor transform, we don't really see them transform.
Yeah.
And they move so quick. I never saw what Cheetor looked like, ever.
Yeah.
Like, there's too much flipping.
That
and
was
I'm
weird
like,
to me. That
I'm
was like, weird to me I, that the beasts were never really
robots. I just need one shot. I want to see how you put together... Because, I mean, it was one of my favorite animated, I guess you call it a cartoon, animated shows as a kid.
Yeah.
Had all the toys. I gave some to my stepson, like, probably like 3-4 years ago. He broke them all because he was like 3. But anyway, but yeah, the fact that I did kind of expect a somewhat of a Beast Wars movie. And when you do realize it's not that, you're like, where are they at? I don't, all right. That's,
yeah.
All right, cool. Yeah, so it was that part was very underwhelming. I was, and it didn't help that I watched it in 3D 40X, so I'm like getting jerked around and I'm a little upset, swinging at the air. Yeah, I don't, and I'm guessing because it's called Rise of the Beast, they're like, oh, we're gonna save it for the next movie. Well, you know, you piss too many people off, it ain't gonna be a next movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is Optimus always been this aggro?
Like, no.
No. Just like, what is up with Optimus? He's like, and I'll tear his head off. And I'm just like, what are you, Optimus?
Yeah.
Turn into a cowboy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. It was interesting. Anything else about Transformers that you want to focus on before we move on? It's the best ever.
An interesting franchise cameo towards the end of this film.
Yeah, it's spoiler, obviously, but... But yeah, there's let's just say the HCU.
it's a thing now. It's a thing.
Everybody's gonna have a universe.
Everybody.
Yep.
Everybody.
And there's a mid credit scene.
Yep.
Yes. Yes, there is that as well.
But I couldn't tell you what happened in that mid credit scene. I already forgot.
Dom, did you have any other thoughts?
Just know that you don't get what you want.
And that's coming from somebody who liked
the
movie.
Yeah,
it doesn't deliver, at least doesn't deliver your expectations. You may get what you want, but I don't think you're going to get what you're expecting, which isn't always a bad thing. For me it was, but not necessarily for everybody.
Well, sometimes if you try, you just might find you get what you need.
It's true. It does happen that way.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, we're heading into the best ever challenge. These are the best ever insect movies. We're going to count these down. We'll go round robin. We'll go pretty quickly here. Just name the movie and give a couple thoughts about why you enjoy it. If somebody has it higher, they will trump you.
Trump!
So that they can talk about it at the higher point. I'll kick us off. I had Ant-Man at number 5. I really, really enjoy this movie. I really, really enjoy Ant-Man. It is one of those movies where I feel like you get that sense of scale thing that I was talking about, and it gets the humor in that. So that was my number 5. Andrew, you're up next.
I'm going to go with The Butterfly Effect.
Ooh.
Trump.
Oh,
Trump.
All right.
Trump!
Dom, what do you got at number 5?
I have Ladybugs.
Ooh, talk about it.
That was my first introduction to Rodney Dangerfield in 92. And, I mean, it's a fun movie. You got, you know, he's the coach. He's losing. He decides to dress his stepson up as a girl. And they start winning. It's just a fun movie. Rodney Dangerfield is a lot of fun. That's kind of my thrust into into comedy. And it's an all around fun movie. It's one of those ones that it may not completely age well, but you're gonna get laughs every time you watch it.
Nice. Ladybugs. All right, on to our number fours. My number four is Aquila and the Bee. I really, really enjoy this Spelling Bee movie. I don't know what it is about spelling bees. I find them compelling and interesting, and then you add a human heart story to it, and it's always going to be good stuff. So yeah, I really, really enjoy this one. You should check out Aquila and the Bee. Andrew, you're number four.
Number four this week, I have The Grave of the Fireflies.
Good choice. Yeah.
What a happy, happy movie, you guys. Yeah, this is one of the most depressing, sad movies of all time. It's a Japanese animated film about a small village that is right on the precipice of, it was either Hiroshima or Nagasaki. Like, this brother is trying to save his younger sibling, and through starvation, through, you know, destruction of the city, of the nation, actually. It's just a heart-wrenching, terrifying story of, like, the cost of war. Mm-hmm. But but there are moments of beauty in it, too. So, Grave of Fireflies.
Very nice. Dom, what do you got at number four?
I have Arachnophobia.
Interesting.
Nice.
Like Jaws, Anaconda, this is one of those movies, I think, that made people just completely terrified of spiders. It's just outrageous. They're everywhere, and you know, they're the silent assassin. And you know, as you get older, like myself, I go to like Repticons and people with tarantulas and things like that. So I'm not like that anymore. But when I was a kid and I saw a spider, as tough as I looked, I'm running the other way. And it's because of this movie.
There you go.
No, I'm right there with you. This movie terrified me as a kid. I'm right there with you.
It's definitely scary for sure. All right, on to our number threes. My number three is The Mosquito Coast, Harrison Ford. Mm. This is one of those movies that tweaks the philosophical part of my brain. I like a lot of the conversations that are happening here, the decisions that are being made, the ideas and the plot is very interesting to me, and it's Harrison Ford, and Harrison Ford just does great work. The Mosquito Coast would be my number three. Andrew, what is your number three?
Probably going to get Trump, but this is where I have A Bug's Life.
Trump!
Dom, what is your number three?
My number three is The Butterfly Effect.
there we go.
Nice.
I'm a sucker for time travel, no matter how it's done. And this movie is gritty, it's dark, it's uncomfortable. And this is, you know, I think when this came out, I was in high school as a sophomore or junior. And this is when, it's one of those movies that if you're younger and you see it, you kind of get to think outside the box and play with what, you know, this is where I learned the term The Butterfly Effect, that's used in all these time travel things. But it's always one that I always went back to when it was on and watched it. And it's worth a watch if you haven't seen it.
There you go. Butterfly Effect. All right, on to our number twos. This is where I have A Bug's Life. At number two, Andrew had it at number three. My love for Pixar is known throughout the ages. It is not a surprise that I really enjoy this movie. I think it is interesting because it came out at the same time as Ants. A lot of times it gets kind of jumbled into that Ants versus Bug's Life conversation instead of being recognized as the movie after Toy Story. Like, what did Pixar do to follow up Toy Story? And they told this really amazing and fun tale of these bugs. I think the Dave Foley performance in this is really great, as are many of the performances. So, yeah, Bug's Life is good stuff. I have it at number two. Andrew, what is your number two?
This is where I have Papillon, the old Steve McQueen, Dustin Hoffman film. Papillon is French for butterfly. This is another film that just gives you the warm and fuzzies. No, it's about French Guiana prison colony and the rigors that the prisoners had to go through there. And Steve McQueen's character is constantly trying to escape, even because he's innocent of his crimes. and the links he'll go to be a free man and the punishments that he will risk are it's a testament to human will and the human spirit. It's a really, really good movie.
Papillon is at number two for Andrew. Dom, what's your number two?
Number two, I have Bumblebee.
Nice.
Nice and thematic.
Yeah, I mean, I think that most people have this towards the top of their list of the Transformers movies. And it, for me, it is number one, number two. It kind of swaps depending on how I feel. And at this point, it's kind of looking like Hailee Steinfeld, whatever she's in, it's just going to work. And it works in the show, too.
Yep. As mentioned, Bumblebee is my favorite Transformers movie. So there you go. Yeah. All right, on to our number ones. Guys, I cheated. I cheated with my number one, and I'm just admitting it now. If you don't like it, I apologize. My number one is Parasite, which parasites aren't always bugs. I know they're not always bugs, but they often are. And I actually just rewatched this movie last night. I think the fourth time I've seen it. It just gets better and better. Yeah. It's so beautiful, so intricate. The sound design on this movie is so good. Man, I love this film. Just a surprise from beginning to end, and just an amazing story. Just amazing original story. So Parasite is my number one. Andrew, what's your number one?
Spider-Man No Way Home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If we're counting Parasite as insects, we're counting arachnids as insects.
That's right. So, that's right.
Yes. Yeah. It's still wild that they did it. That's, it's wild they did it. I'll just say it. It's my favorite Spider-Man film, one of my favorite MCU films. It's a beautiful story that's funny, filled with action, and there are a lot of tear-jerking moments. It hits every single button.
Yep. Dom, what's your number one?
Mine is Into the Spider-Verse.
That's a good choice. Nice. That's a good choice.
As I mentioned before, the animated movie, this was one of those ones that I was like, you know what? I'm wrong about animated films. And then Guillermo del Toro also told me I'm wrong about animated films. Mm-hmm. And I have been on this journey recently of going back and watching these beloved animated films that I've heard over the years. But sure. this movie... I hadn't seen anything like it. It's amazing. And I was actually kind of late on it when I watched it because I was like, it's animated. Do I really? And I watched it. And I was like, I was wrong. What am I doing? Yeah, it's still, I think, going to be a lot of whether they love Across the Spider-Verse more. I think this is still going to be that one that you kind of hold a little more dear than its sequel.
Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't really mention that in the review we did. I do think this is still the superior movie. I think Into the Spider-Verse is a better movie than Across the Spider-Verse. I may be in the minority on that too. I don't know, but I really do have a big love for that movie. So good choice. You mentioned Bumblebee was one of my honorable mentions. For my Spider-Man entry, I had Spider-Man 2, which is... I think an amazing Spider-Man movie. And then Beetlejuice. Wanted to mention Beetlejuice as well.
I didn't think about Beetlejuice.
As a good one. Did you guys have any other honorable mentions?
Well, I'll tell you what the gurus picked for their number one was Into the Spider-Verse. The second one was No Way Home. And the third was Beetlejuice. So
There you go. All right, that'll wrap it up for the Best Ever Challenge. Before we hit our finish off with our buried treasure, just a big thank you to our SIFPOP members. Thank you for supporting what goes on here. We couldn't do it without you. Did another MOOPs today, members only pre-show, members only Ormsby pre-show. So you can check that out if you are a member at a certain level. Go check it out at patreon.com/SIFPOP. All right. What is that one? We'll go on to our buried treasure. What is that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about? Andrew, kick us off.
I'm watching the new Apple TV show Silo, and I'm 3 episodes in. I am enjoying it so far. I see potential. It hasn't really hooked me yet, like with a, this is my new favorite show kind of a mentality or anything like that. But the concept is unique. It's a really fascinating, I love world building. And whenever you confine your world to a silo and people don't know if it's safe to go out or not. They've been down there so long, they don't know. It's just fascinating, like dystopian futures and the governmental order that takes charge or takes hold. I always find that kind of stuff fascinating and interesting.
Very cool. I've heard lots about it. I haven't had a chance to check it out yet. Dom, have you watched any of Silo?
No, but I keep hearing good things. Like all on Facebook, too. People are talking about it.
Yeah, I keep hearing good things as well. I might get it on my list. For my buried treasure, finally watched Steven Spielberg's first feature film. Went back and watched Duel. And I think that's early 70s. Somewhere in that range. And boy, you can sure see that this young man has talent. It's really interesting. By the way, if you don't know about the movie, it is the story of a road rage incident, let's say. But what's really interesting about it is you never see really the actual person, the other person involved in this battle of the roads. And so the truck itself almost becomes, well, let's just say like a Jaws like figure in the movie, where it is stalking this man. And to turn a semi truck into a villain is a really interesting thing. But yeah, I think I'd highly recommend Duel. It's a really interesting kind of, under any other hands, it'd probably be a little bit of a basic narrative, but the way Spielberg shoots it and creates the tension, I think it really does work. So Duel is available on VOD. Dom, what is your buried treasure?
Well, since it is Pride Month, I figured it'd be apropos to mention the movie Monica, starring Trace Lissette. I believe it hit select theaters last month, but this is some of my favorite cinematography of the year. I mean, and the story seems somewhat simple as far as she is openly trans without saying that she's trans. You see shots of her giving herself shots for the hormone therapy, and there's these shots of like, it's reinforcing that this is a woman. The shots of the hair and her figure and all these things that you go, I don't know how to describe without you seeing it. It's just, it really reinforces like this is a movie that is telling a story two different ways without it letting you know that it's telling a story two different ways. And, you know, she's going back to take care of her mother. And she hasn't seen her mother since she has transitioned. And you have this whole family drama situation. But it's a great film. I watched it twice. And just that I haven't seen cinematography like that in a while that really told a story at the beginning and would set it up for the rest of the film.
Very nice. That is Monica, recently out in theaters. Duel on video on demand in Silo on Apple TV Plus. Well, we did it, guys. We managed to do a podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did.
Congratulations to all involved. We did not even have to get into the SIFPOP Society to make it happen. So congratulations. Thank you so much for joining us today for SIFPOP. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
And thank you to Dom Fisher for coming in and hanging out with us today.
Yeah.
Dom, anything you want to plug? Where can people find you?
You know, my Instagram is where I usually am, at the Dom Fisher, at King_Fish on Twitter. And I'm trying to make more video reviews. I have a few on our Geek Vibes Nation TikTok. We recently had some videos go viral, I guess. One got a million views. I had a review that got like 11,000 views. It's kind of weird that many people saw my face. But yeah, I'm trying to do it more often, so you will be able to catch me there as well.
Nice. Yeah, very check cool. out Dom and all his stuff. Really appreciate you being here again. We also really appreciate our supporters. starts at $3 a month, and you get access to all the bonus episodes at different levels, as well as some other fun perks. Check that all out at patreon.com/sifpop if you want to be a SifPop member. There's also a lot of ways to connect with us. Feel free to leave a comment, a rating, or a review wherever you listen, whether that's Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever. You can email us feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show, too. So make sure you let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than an animal figuring out what it means for them to roll out. We will be back with Elemental in The Flash next week. So another couple big hitters next week, and we will see you then.
Bye.
Adios.